Turn to Romans chapter 10. I had no idea that the Sunday school lesson would be such a good foundation and illustration of the message today. When I looked at it this morning, I thought, oh, wow, okay. Of course, almost any message or any subject in the Bible would somewhat serve to illustrate this, but none is quite as well as what we read today about Saul and why he rebelled, what was his thinking, the children of Israel, and what was their thinking. Do you ever wonder why people think so differently? I've talked to a lot of different people and thought, how'd you arrive at that conclusion? We have people who in religion seem to hit it pretty good, but in politics they're way off. In morals they seem to hit it pretty good, but in their doctrine they're way off. There's so many things to disagree on. So many areas for conflict and controversy. Well, the Apostle Paul, in exposing the root of Israel's controversy with God, he exposes the root of all controversy. And I want to take a passage of Scripture. In its context, gives us a principle, and then we're going to use it in many other contexts, but it's the same principle. Romans chapter 10, verse 1. Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they might be saved. For I bear them record that they have a zeal of God, but not according to knowledge. For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness and going about to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted themselves unto the righteousness of God. Now, it said they had a zeal of God, but really they didn't have a zeal of God. They had a zeal for what they perceived as God, a zeal for a certain type of justice, a certain type of right, a certain type of truth, but all the while it was not according to knowledge, it was not according to the facts of the case. Okay? So they had a zeal for something, but it wasn't God. But they thought it was God. They assumed it was God. They would have told you it was God. They told themselves it was God, but it wasn't God. For they were ignorant of God's righteousness. Now in the context, this word righteousness, if it were translated more accurately as justification, they were ignorant of God's justification, God's program for saving sinners through the atonement of Christ. And because they were ignorant of it, they were going about to establish their own justification through the ceremonies of the law, the blood of bulls and goats. And because they were going about to establish their own justification, they weren't willing to submit to God's justification by faith through Jesus Christ. Okay? That's the argument that the Apostle Paul is making here. And the next verse says, for Christ is the goal and aim, the fulfillment of the law concerning justification to everyone that believes. Okay? But in reality, if you say they being ignorant of God's righteousness or God's justification, they are ignorant of God. They are ignorant of God because God's justification includes his definition of sin. God's justification includes his definition of right, of wrong, of atonement, of what's expected of people. If God is going to forgive you for this, it's because you trespass something that he envisioned to accomplish. And so it includes his definition of everything. It includes his idea and his ideology, his viewpoint. And we're going to use the word that has become more popular in the last 20 years probably. God's paradigm. Now God's paradigm is a model, a pattern. It's God's worldview. And you could go on and on and on with synonyms. A paradigm is how I perceive and think life ought to be. Okay? My paradigm of my relationship with my wife is what I think it ought to be. Now, everybody has what they think life or God or justice or righteousness or the church. They have this idea in their mind of how it ought to be, how everybody ought to live, how the church ought to operate. And that's your paradigm. And they, being ignorant of God's paradigm, naturally were going about to establish what? Having a zeal of God. No, they had a zeal for what they thought God ought to be. Okay? They had a zeal for how God ought to operate. And because they were distanced from God, what God really was and his paradigm, they were busy establishing their own. Okay? And because they were busy establishing their own, they were not submitted to his. So we're talking about controversy. The root of all controversy is paradigm wars. God's paradigm, the model in the mind of God, includes what society ought to be like, what your family ought to be like, what husbands ought to be like, what fathers ought to be like, what wives ought to be like, what mothers ought to be like, what young men ought to be like, what young ladies ought to be like, how our church ought to be, what preachers ought to be like, and what Christian men in general, in your business, government, how it ought to be. God has an idea. He has priorities, methods, ways. Okay? But the Jews' zeal of God was really a zeal for their own Jewish paradigm, which they labeled God, and hence they were not submitted to God. Actually, they were at war with God. Really. The people of God who were busy about God's service, supposedly, were really at war with God. Yeah, and he says they have a zeal of God. He's not charging them with heathenism. He's not charging them with blatant desire to tear down and destroy the image of one God and, you know, get into idolatry. No, but they were at war with God, nonetheless. So, every degree of ignorance of God's paradigm is a degree of conflict, regardless of your motives. Do you have a zeal of God? Are you sure? How do you know that your zeal is really a zeal of God and not for your paradigm? If you're ignorant of God's paradigm, you are going about to establish your own regardless of what label you put on it. Your own worldview, your own standard. It's why you do what you do. It's why you think what you think. It's who you are. You have a sense inside of you of what is right and wrong based on your viewpoint from your position in life in the universe, and you are going about to establish that, and you would like to think that it's a zeal of God, and you would like to think that you're establishing God's paradigm. All too often, it's your own paradigm that you're working to establish. You know, the Baptists have a paradigm, and that's what they're going about to establish. I was in it at one time. I can see clearly. There are paradigm categories, classes, or cliques, where a group of people have a very similar paradigm, and so they get together. The Methodists have a paradigm. The Mennonites have a paradigm. The Amish paradigm. And those who are faithful Amish are going about to establish it. But the Amish want you to think that it's the zeal of God. And the Mennonites want you to think they're establishing God's paradigm. And so do the Baptists and the Methodists, but they're all a different paradigm. The Muslims and the Catholics and the Communists have their own paradigm, and they are busy going about to establish it. I'm going to ask you this morning, what are you going about to establish? Saul, I have performed the commandment of the Lord. It's because the people had recently said, we want a king like all the other nations. That was their paradigm. And God said, okay, you can have a king, but you're going to do it my way. But they still had their own paradigm. And so when they went out, the other kings and the other nations, when they conquered, they took the king captive and brought the best of the spoil. That's what the other nations did. And they wanted a king like the other nations, right? So we have a paradigm war. We have the people's idea of what God ought to be happy with, and we have their, and we have God's idea. In your marriage, what are you going about to establish? You and your spouse, do you ever get in a fight? Do you ever have a conflict? I'll tell you why, because your paradigms are different. What you're going about to establish is different. She has this view of what marriage ought to be like, and what a husband ought to be like, and what a wife ought to be like, and what the home ought to be like, and what child rearing ought to be like, and what discipline ought to be like. Go on and on and on. And you have in your mind a paradigm. And some, in some areas they agree, and some areas they may not. And so we have the basis of conflict. And that, and we also have the reason why God set up submission and authority. In your music, in your dress, in your hair, in your political views, in your religious views. Do you ever hear people say, we don't discuss politics or religion? Because oftentimes your paradigm really shows up in those two categories. Okay? Your relationship with your family. Parents, siblings. Do you ever have a paradigm clash? Your relationship with the church. Your morals and manners and lifestyle. Your paradigm is the root of why you do what you do, how you calculate, how you think, how you arrive at what you want out of life and what you're going about to establish in life. And if you are ignorant of God's righteousness, His standard, His will, His way, His paradigm, then you are going about to establish your own, and you are not submitted to His. There's no two ways. I mean, this is 1 plus 1 equals 2. Okay? And now, go back to verse 1, Romans 10. Brethren, the heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is what? That they might be saved. This is a salvation issue. They will not be saved in this mindset. They will not be saved while they're having a paradigm war with God. Number one, they have a zeal of God. Number two, they're ignorant of God's right and going about to establish their own right, have not submitted to God's right, and therefore they will not be saved. Let me ask you this. Were they guilty? It says they were ignorant of God's righteousness. Were they guilty or were they innocent? The answer is they were guilty. If they were innocent, God's wrath would not be upon them. If they were innocent, God would just have to show it to them. But they were guilty. Well, that seems almost a little unfair sometimes. If I'm ignorant, how can I be in trouble for something where I am ignorant? Because the ignorance in this area is due to neglect. The ignorance in this area is due to presumption. The ignorance in this area is due to pride. The ignorance in this area is due to convenience. The ignorance in this area is due to loving your own paradigm and not looking further because you are satisfied. You say, oh, not me, really? Got some questions for you. Is it your goal in life to know and establish God's paradigm? How much time have you spent to search it out and understand it? How much prayer has God heard from you for understanding of His ways? God, I want to know how you want it done. I want to know what you want in a husband. I want to know what you want in a wife. I want to know what you want in a youth. I want to have a home like you want. God, what is your paradigm? Show me thy way. Teach me your way. How much of that has God heard? And if it hasn't been very much, then your ignorance of God is your fault. And whatever ignorance there is, because you've not been diligently seeking God's righteousness to know His way, whatever ignorance there is, is a degree of paradigm war with God. They being ignorant of God's righteousness, naturally their zeal of God was going about to establish something. But when you're ignorant of God's way, you're establishing something else. Right? Mm-hmm. You say, "But I was ignorant." Why? Because you were content to be ignorant. If God doesn't hear from you daily, "Teach me thy way, show me thy way, enlighten my mind, make me what you want me to be," then you might be very zealous for this thing you call God, but it's your paradigm and not His. The reason the Jews fell into this ditch is because it coincided with what they valued. So we need to ask ourselves, how and where do my values come from? How much time have I spent to know God's values? How much prayer have I invested to understand God's values? Jesus said in John 5:41, "I receive not honor from men." In other words, I value not honor from men, but I know you, that you have not the love of God in you. God's paradigm, God's principle, the love of God, okay? God's law, God's ways. I am come in my Father's name, and you receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, basically your value system, him ye will receive. How can ye believe? And I'm going to add in there, what is right? How can you believe what is right, which receive honor one of another, and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one that accuseth you, even Moses, in whom ye trust. For had ye believed Moses, teaching God's paradigm, God's love, God's values, you would have believed me, for he wrote of me. It's the same ethic, the same plan. It's all God's love. But if ye believe not his writings, how shall you believe my words? If you will not receive God's paradigm from the mouth of Moses, then you're not going to receive Jesus Christ, he says, because we're on the same page. Different values, you're going to have a different paradigm. God says this is how things ought to be, and you decide this is how things ought to be, and you assume that you're in line with God. But any ignorance of God's way is a degree of working to establish something contrary to God. The reason the Jews fell into this false paradigm is because it was the majority view of their peers. Luke 16:15, he said unto them, "Ye are they which justify yourself before men, but God knoweth your hearts. For that which is highly esteemed among men is abomination in the sight of God." The reason the Jews fell into this wrong ideal is because it served their selfish purposes. Mark 7:6, he answered and said unto them, "Well hath Isaiah prophesied of you hypocrites, as it is written, this people honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Howbeit, in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of God, ye hold the tradition of men, as the washing of pots and cups, and many other such like things ye do." And he said unto them, "Full well ye reject the commandment of God, that ye may keep your own tradition." I can easily say there, without doing any violence to the text, full well ye reject the paradigm of God, that ye may keep your own paradigm. That's what he's saying. You reject the righteousness of God, that you may keep your own righteousness. The reason the Jews fell into this wrong view is because of unconfessed sin in their lives. John 8:31. Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, "If you continue in my word, then are you my disciples indeed, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." They answered him, "We be Abraham's seed, and were never in bondage to any man. How sayest thou ye should be made free?" Jesus answered them, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, whosoever committeth sin is the servant of sin." And you're not free, is what he was telling them. The reason the Jews fell into this error is because they were resting on their religious activities, their ceremonies, and their family ties for acceptance with God. They had a paradigm of what ought to be expected of them, and they fulfilled what in their mind ought to be expected of them and assumed this is God's paradigm. Then said he to the multitude that came forth to be baptized of him, O generation of vipers, who hath warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bring forth therefore fruits worthy of repentance. And begin not to say within yourselves, We have Abraham to our father. For I say unto you that God is able of these stones to raise up children unto Abraham, and now also the axe is laid into the root of the trees. Every tree therefore that bringeth not forth God's paradigm. Right? Who's going to define good fruit? Who's going to define good fruit? They were already defining good fruit. The axe is laid in the root of the tree. Every tree, therefore, that bringeth not forth God's paradigm is hewn down and cast into the fire. Paradigm war is what we're talking about. Okay? The reason the Jews fell into this rebellion against God's paradigm is because they were not humbly seeking God's paradigm. Matthew 13:15, For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes, and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. Now, these are the same reasons that any and all people have a paradigm clash with God. Exact same reasons. How and where do your values come from? What connections, friends, family, peers, are you trusting and following? How much time have you spent seeking to know God's values? How much prayer have you invested to understand God's values? In marriage. Well, I think a wife ought to be like this. I think this is how a husband ought to relate to his wife. Are you sure that that's God's paradigm of marriage? Well, honey, I think you ought to act like this. Whose paradigm is that? Well, husband, I think you ought to act like this. Whose paradigm is that? And how much time have you spent double-checking and seeking and praying for God's paradigm? And if you have not invested time seeking to understand His paradigm, guess what? You, being ignorant of God's paradigm, are going about to establish your own paradigm, and you're not submitted to His. That's all there is to it. But the reality is, we are very presumptuous people. We like to think that our grip on right and wrong is infallible. Because, this is the way it ought to be. Are you sure? I've heard people tell me that so many times. Well, this is wrong. I'll say, well, what about this, this, and this that Jesus said? Well, there's a lot they're not thinking about. There are verses, there are principles. You go talk to some pacifist, okay? It's a good illustration of the situation. Well, if someone's breaking into my house, my family's going to go to heaven, but he's going to go to hell. And so if I kill him, I'm sending him to hell. And that's obviously wrong.
Wrong.
Wrong. God's the judge, not you. What about God's paradigm? God put you there as a strong man of the house to protect your family. How do you know all your family's going to heaven? Assumption. Right. Assumption, right?
Right.
How do you know you're going to go to heaven when you don't obey God and protect your family? When you stand by and watch the innocent blood, you're culpable. And you're not sending that man to hell, you're sending him to the judge. God will send him to hell if that's where he needs to go. So there's this assumption, assumption, assumption. You got this thing about marriage, divorce, remarriage. The Marcionism is full of these assumptions because Marcionism is a major paradigm war with God. Mm-hmm. Eternal security teaching, Calvinism, you name all of them, they're major paradigm wars with God. Predestination. Mm. Talk about a paradigm war. Yeah. Antinomianism. Talk about a paradigm war. What about in your parenting? I have talked to so many parents who are so quick to give, well, I think. Well, that's too harsh. We've had people here, and they hear someone take a child out and give them a well-deserved paddling, and they come afterwards and say, is that okay? I say, yeah, I think it was enough. No, that's not what they were saying. That's not what they thought. But everybody is operating on what? Their own standards. They got these files of how they think things ought to be. How a child ought to be disciplined. Where did you get that? Who told you that? See? When's the last time you got the Bible out and spent an hour asking God to show you what He thinks, what His pattern and model and view is of child rearing, and went through and searched the scriptures concerning the subject to get His paradigm instead of your own? Most people don't take the time. They assume they know. Well, Israel did. Israel was so, they just assumed they knew. What about in your relationship with authority? With your parents? With the church? With the government? In your finances? Your business relationships? Your church life? Your doctrine? Do you realize there are multitudes of things where you assume that you're establishing God's paradigm, but you've never really searched it out? You've never really taken the time to say, Lord, what is your view of this subject? Okay, we got an administration in the White House that's seeking to build a wall and establish legal immigration. Okay? And we got people who are claiming to be Christians putting verses on their Twitter page about how that we are supposed to accept strangers and care for strangers. There's a paradigm war going on there. Israel never allowed illegal immigration. It was wrong. When David wanted his family to stay in Moab because of Saul, he went to the king and got permission for his family to sojourn in Moab. That's the way you operate. Legal immigration. You go through the authorities. You don't just move in and squat in somebody else's realm without permission. That's not biblical, and Christians are not supposed to support such things.
Right.
Okay? We're supposed to support legal immigration. Otherwise, it's trespass. Nowhere in the Bible will you find any support for illegal immigration. And yet there's Christians who think that that's God's way. We are, our law should allow people just to trample over our borders without ever any consequences. Because that's the Christian thing. That's love. You've got a paradigm problem. That's not God's paradigm. When God set up a nation, when God set up laws, He expected people to respect the laws of each land. So no, we're not supposed to do that. But that's what we find. We find these paradigm wars. We find these people who assume that I'm talking for God. It's not so. Let me ask you this. General George Patton. I don't know that I'd want him for my neighbor, my friend. I certainly wouldn't want him for a pastor. But during World War II, he did incredible service for this nation and won great victories. He was a powerful and effective general. His morals were nothing to brag about, okay? He was a very crass, his language was terrible, and his morals were bad. Now, in World War II, we're fighting Germany. Is that the time to start trying to take down our general because we don't appreciate his person? Would that be smart? Should we start attacking General George Patton, who's out there on the front lines fighting against a much bigger problem than him, fighting against an enemy that is guilty of the blood of millions? Now, should we as Americans start attacking General George Patton? Would that be smart?
No.
Would it be right?
No.
No. In that same thing, would it be right for the children of Israel and the prophets and Elijah to attack Jehu because he was a pretty coarse fella? He was a coarse fella. Okay? Jehu was no schoolboy. He was a rough, tough general. And he had a mind of his own. And he saw a lot of blood and guts. But God saw him as a tool that could get rid of Jezebel and the Ahab dynasty and Baal all in one swoop. But he was not someone that God would call for your pastor. Okay? So would it have been smart for the Israelis, the pious Israelis, to start attacking Jehu and undermining him and trying to mutiny his program because they didn't like his manners? Would that be smart? There was a much bigger chicken to fry, man. Okay. Maybe you could make appeals to Jehu's character after Jezebel's dead, after Ahab's gone, after Baal worship's gone. Then maybe you could start making appeals to Ahab's character as a moral, godly Israelite. He was not a good representation of moral, godly Israelites. Understand the principle? So God's paradigm was to choose Jehu to get rid of that. Now, the same goes with our present president. I wouldn't want him for a pastor. I wouldn't set him up before my children as a moral standard. But there are big things happening, and he is fighting big battles for this nation. He is doing good things in the administrations he's in. The steps he's taken are good for our nation, good for our churches, good for our children's future. He's a very shrewd businessman, and he's getting things done. And what he has done in office is probably 99% beneficial for we as American people. So is it smart? Is it God's paradigm to try to undermine him and speak evil of him and hinder him and mutiny the ship? Because after all, he said a bad word. After all, he's not the kind of moral figure that we want for a pastor. Okay, take him out. Then who's left? Take Jehu out. Who's left? Jezebel. Take George Patton out. Who's left? Hitler. Okay, so this all comes down to what I'm talking about. A paradigm war. You've got it all in your mind what Jehu ought to be like. And he's not what you think he ought to be like, so therefore, you're going to stand against him. Oh, you're so wonderful. But you're in a paradigm war against God. God chose the man for a purpose. God can take care of his morals himself. So what would my position be? Well, the Rechabites. Jonadab, the son of Rechab. Was he a godly man? Yes. How did he respond to Jehu? He gave him his right hand and helped him. Was Jonadab a godlier man than Jehu? Most likely, from what we can see in Scripture. But Jonadab supported Jehu because Jezebel, Ahab's dynasty, and Baal were much bigger problems, and Jehu was doing a good thing. Jehu was doing a right thing, and so Jonadab, the son of Rechab, helped him. There's a principle. So, those who are ignorant of God's paradigm, going about to establish their own paradigm, are warring against God. And yet they think they're so right and they think they're so smart, but they're warring against God. Just like I would be if I was warring against Jehu. You're in the way. Okay? Josiah was a very good king. Pharaoh came up out of Egypt. Josiah was a godly king. Josiah was going to go out against Pharaoh. Surely that's the right thing to do, isn't it? Pharaoh told Josiah, look, God has sent me against to do this. You stay out of it. You have no, you just stay out of it. Josiah thought, man, I know from my perspective what is right here. I'm going to go out. This is the right thing to do. And you know what? He died. He got in the way of God's program because he assumed that he had God's paradigm. He did not have God's paradigm. It is so important that we humble ourselves when it comes to doctrine. try to convince the plain people of their Marcionism. They are so sure of their paradigm. But you and I know from the Word of God, their paradigm is wrong. Their paradigm's in the way. Their paradigm is a hindrance. Well, I can see it in so many other people's lives. How quick should I be to assume that my paradigm's right? Or should that scare me half to death to assume that my paradigm's right without thoroughly investigating God's paradigm to make sure? We deal with situations in the church. Just little interactions between people that it's like, well, I just thought this was the right thing to do. But others can see that it wasn't the right thing to do. Turn to Psalm 119. Because what I think is the right thing to do is based on my paradigm. You would never say, my kingdom come, my will be done in earth. You would never want to say that. No Christian would ever want to say that. But how often is that really what's happening? And when you say, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, how much do you know about it? Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. God's saying, do you know much about my kingdom? Do you know much about my will being done in earth? How much time have you searched the scriptures to know my will? Okay? If you're not searching the scriptures to know my will, stop assuming you know my will. Stop saying, thy kingdom come. Now I can say that and say, Lord, whatever it is, I'm happy with it. Even if I don't know about it, I want it. Okay? But when I'm committed that way, I'm also going to be searching for it. Psalm 119. How many of you young people in here have recently memorized Psalm 119 or a good portion of it? That's tremendous. That is wonderful. Psalm 119 ought to be your attitude through life. Okay? But Psalm 119 has one major thrust, and that is, God, I want to know your paradigm. I don't want to take another step outside of it. I don't want to work contrary to it. I don't want to be in war with God. Okay? Let's read it. Blessed are the undefiled in the way who walk in the law of the Lord. Blessed are they that keep his testimonies, that seek him with the whole heart. They also do no iniquity. They walk in his ways. Thou hast commanded us to keep thy precepts diligently. Oh, that my ways were directed to keep thy precepts, thy statutes. Then shall I not be ashamed when I have respect unto all thy commandments. I will praise thee with uprightness of heart when I shall have learned thy righteous judgments. I will keep thy statutes. Oh, forsake me not utterly. Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? By taking heed thereto according to thy word. With my whole heart have I sought thee. Oh, let me not wander from thy paradigm. Thy commandments, thy word, have I hid in my heart that I might not sin against thee. Blessed art thou, O Lord. Teach me thy statutes. With my lips have I declared all the judgments of thy mouth. I have rejoiced in the way of thy testimonies as much as in all riches. I will meditate in thy precepts and have respect unto thy ways. I will delight myself in thy statutes. I will not forget thy word. The whole thrust of this is basically, God, I don't want to go about establishing my paradigm. Show me your paradigm. Show me your view of marriage. Show me what you think a husband ought to be like and what a wife ought to be like and how to train these children and what our home should look like and what our evangelism should look like and how we should reach out to the lost. How do we relate to other people in the church? God may look at us and say, well, you're doing a real good job of taking care of yourself, but you're not very helpful for reaching out. Oh, really? God, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. I hadn't thought about it. Or God may say, you know, you're so busy here doing these things that you're not maintaining this or I mean, I wish we could sit down and say, Lord, give me a report card. Give me an evaluation. I want to know. But the fact that I want to know is the beginning. It's the foundation stone of knowing. Okay? In Psalm 37:30, the mouth of the righteous speaketh wisdom, and his tongue talketh of judgment. The law of his God is in his heart. None of his steps shall slide. Psalm 27:11, teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. And by the way, I have prayed that since I was a youth, and my enemies were everything that would distract me from this, God's paradigm. My enemies were everything that would lead me contrary to it, influence me contrary to it. I don't want to go about establishing something contrary to it. I don't want to be pushing things and allowing things or establishing ideas that don't fit in his paradigm that are basically my paradigm. Psalm 86:11, teach me thy way, O Lord. I will walk in thy truth. Unite my heart to fear thy name. Now turn to Romans chapter 1. A few chapters previous to where you're at. Or I guess you're in Psalm 119. We start out in Romans 10. I want you to understand, when you read the Bible, the term the righteousness of God, also the term the salvation of God, there's also the term the gospel of God. But when you read that, you need to understand that that is talking about the overall mind. Because the gospel of God includes his definition of sin, his definition of redemption, his definition of a sinner, his definition of a saint, his definition of heaven, his definition of... It includes everything. Okay? So you really don't have the gospel of God until you've got God's paradigm. The same with the salvation of God. In Romans 1:16, for I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first and also to the Greek, for therein is the righteousness of God, the justification of God, the paradigm of God, the program of God, God's plan for saving sinners, as Adam Clark defines that term, revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. In other words, your justification is by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. They suppress the truth. The word hold means they have it, but they suppress it. Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. In Acts 28:28, it says, be it known therefore unto you that the salvation of God is sent unto the Gentiles. Now all these terms include the paradigm of God. Okay? Because you can't have any of these accurately, properly understood without seeking this and properly understanding the whole picture. Now, do you believe that if you sought to understand God's ways, that you could learn? How many of you think that's true? If you really sought to understand and find God's paradigm, you could learn, you could grow, you could actually improve in that area. Sure you could. As a wife, as a husband, as a youth, in your morals, in your music, in your dress, in your attitudes, in the use of your tongue, in your attitude towards others, in your goals, in your ambitions, in your political views, in your religious views, everything. Now, the question is this, and you need to ask yourself to this. Ask yourself this question. Do you really want to know? Do you really want to know? When the Bible says, blessed are they which hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled, it's talking about the same thing. Do I really want to know? Because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. In other words, God has shown them the path. But too often, do we really want to take that path? Do I really want to be the wife that fits in God's paradigm? Do I really want to be the young lady that fits in God's paradigm? Do I really want to be the young man, the husband, the father? Do I really want to run my business that way? Do I really want to submit my music to that? Do I really want to submit my time, my character, my political views? Do I really want to submit everything to it? You say, but it seems like I'd be completely dying to all my ways. Yeah. Yeah. You know, otherwise, it says the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all. And that ungodliness and unrighteousness is what that is the establishing of a different paradigm. Oh, but mine's very close to God's. That's not going to do. There can't be two heavens, one for your paradigm and one for God's, you know, two almighties, two lords, two rulers. No, there's one king that's going to sit on the throne. His paradigm will stand. His paradigm will rule, and everyone going about to establish a different paradigm will be found as transgressors. They will be viewed as mutineers. They will be viewed as the opposition. You say, yeah, but my paradigm, I mean, I'm a very devout Christian. Well, you're a very devout something, no doubt. But what are you going about to establish? Are you at war with God? Most people say, well, no, I'm not. I'm on God's side. The Jews would have adamantly said that. Jesus said the day will come when he which killeth you will think he doeth God's service. Saul is the one analyzing Israel. He experienced it firsthand. He was out there thinking he was serving God. I'm establishing God's kingdom. I'm establishing God's paradigm. And he was at war with God. His paradigm was at war with God's paradigm. And when he realized it, it was devastating. Okay, let's have a quick review and we'll be done. If you are ignorant of God's ways, then you are automatically establishing your own, because you're establishing something. If you are establishing your own, you are not submitting to God's. But if you are ignorant of God's ways, it's your fault. It's because you assume you already know. It's because you're following the herd. It's because you're trusting your church without knowing God's word by yourself. It's because you're satisfied to establish your own. You're happy where you're at. You're content and you're not seeking further because you're happy where you're at. And you know what? Ultimately, you are holding the truth in unrighteousness. It's like, really? Holding the truth in unrighteousness. And people in that mind frame will immediately resist and say, but I'm a good person. But look at all I've done. But I believe the Bible. But I love the Lord. The Jews would have said all that. But they, being ignorant of God's paradigm and going about to establish their own paradigm, were not submitting to God's paradigm. And they would have argued the other side, but there is a standard. It's not left to every man's opinion what God's paradigm is. It's not left to everybody's idea. God has a word. There are principles and statutes and so forth in his word. And we cannot pick and choose. We cannot grab them out of context and use them in our paradigm. Can't do that. Do you really want to know? Do you really want to know? Are you willing to really face the truth about Marcionism? Are you really willing to face the truth about your error? Are you willing to be confronted and accountable for your paradigm? You know why a lot of people don't go to church? This very issue. They haven't found a church that's close enough to their paradigm to go to and fit in. And so they're just going to be out on their own. They don't want confronted. The root of all false doctrine, the root of all deception, the root of all war and crime and conflict is due to a paradigm war with God. You going about to establish what you think because you are willingly ignorant of what he thinks. You haven't searched it out because you really didn't care to know enough because you were satisfied with yours. And therefore, you're not submitted to his. Let's stand together. We dare not take the liberty or the luxury of assuming our viewpoint is God's viewpoint. Too often that is what happens. And on Judgment Day, obviously you weren't born knowing it all, right? But on Judgment Day, God has a list of how many times you asked to understand his ways. How many times you said, teach me thy law. Show me thy way. Teach me, give me understanding, Lord. Give me thy wisdom. Show me thy way over mine. I want to know your paradigm. I want it fulfilled in my life. God knows how much time and effort you put in to knowing his paradigm. And that will be all important. Because every degree of ignorance of his paradigm is conflict with his paradigm. And you are going about to establish something else.